Chapter 30. It turned out that Augustine the First, saint of patience, founder of the court of Coniortus, genius of the river, 10,000 years old and oldest among saints, quick and sophisticated and devious, had a shrewd plan to assist you in the murder of his dutiful brother. His shrewd plan? To get everyone profoundly drunk. 2 hours later, you sat amid a pillage. The remains of a meal lay before you, more than you had ever eaten of your own volition. You'd had to. The only other option was unconsciousness. A pyre of candles cast their radiance across the snowy white linen and the silver cutlery that the saint of patience had so carefully set, and on the crumb-strewn plate that had once contained rolls of some description, but they had been eaten, or put somewhere. You did not know, and you didn't care. The shining bones of cohort heroes hung as silent observers on either side of the room, and you fancied weariness in their eyeless expressions. You were not sure how it had happened. It had seemed to begin as all previous dinners had, just more formal. Maybe Augustine's cooking was more careful and more lavish. He tended to cook in short bursts of violence, serving many parts of a meal but not all at once, which coming from the Drearbur table you found bewildering. You hadn't been able to focus on what you were eating, only that by the third course you had to continue or suffer the consequences. You did not really like the taste of wine, which Augustine had served you before, and had not imagined there could be that much of it. He refilled the glasses before you ever finished one, so that you never made it to the bottom of the first. Now, in the smoking ruins of dinner, he and the saint of joy and God and Ianthe had moved their seats to a cluster at the end of the table. Ianthe's first house robes were somewhere on the floor, and her elbows were on the tablecloth, and her cheeks were pink, which gave her a spurious loveliness. Augustine had removed his jacket and was sitting in his white button-up shirt. The tie at his throat had come undone entirely to hang limp and black beneath the points of his dishevelled collar. Mercy had it worst. The knot of hair at her neck had come down and now was springing loose in pale rose-gold strands, and she was actually sniggering. God sat between them. Teacher had his sleeves rolled up to his elbows. If it was a tidier or nicer shirt than he usually wore, you could not tell. The coronet of bones and leaves had fallen from his brow, probably in among the napkins, and his top button was crooked, and every so often he would come around and fill up everyone's water glasses and say with increasing earnestness, "Keep drinking water, Harrow," as though water were the greatest and most impossible boon granted to the nine houses. His smile kept crinkling the edges of those white encircled eyes. Every so often, you would look over the table at the man you intended to kill. The saint of duty had drunk just as much as Augustine, but had an expression like stone, with not a button out of place. He had more than once shared a glance with you that you were very afraid was solidarity. You weren't sure. You were drinking water. You were drinking a great deal of water.
"To absent friends," said Augustine suddenly, and raised his glass. And everyone said, "Absent friends," and raised their glasses and drank. That was the invention of torture. You had no doubt that either the third or the fifth house had come up with the damned rule that whenever you raised your glass and proposed a sentimental toast, everyone had to drink with you. You sipped. You did not have any absent friends.
"And to our cavaliers,"
said the saint of joy quite suddenly, after everyone had drunk. Augustine raised his glass again.
"I'll drink to that. To cavaliers. We didn't deserve them. And they didn't deserve us, as I always say. To Alfred, Christabel, Pyrrha, Loveday, Nibirius, to them all.
You saw the Emperor darting an impassive glance at the increasingly disarranged saint at his right, but she did not greet this toast with anger. She simply said,
"To Christabel,"
and drained her glass in one single violent motion. When God briefly pressed the tips of his fingers to the tips of her fingers, she said instantly,
"I'm not drunk."
"I'd never think it," he said.
You watched Ianthe take another swig of the pale, apple-yellow liquid in her glass. She leaned over to you and murmured breathlessly, "This is the greatest night of my life."
"I've drunk enough to Alfred over the years, so let me drink to Christabel," said the saint of patience. And he drank, and then he swirled the contents of his glass meditatively. "Here's to Christabel."
Mercy said, with less rancour,
"You never liked Christabel, even before what happened."
"Bullshit, I didn't like Christabel," he said instantly, with the careful, measured reasonableness of a man you had personally seen get through two bottles of wine. "You know what I feel. You know I don't think she was the best influence on Alfred. You know I thought they brought out the worst in each other, and I don't think you disagree."
God said,
"They were very similar people."
"No," said Augustine, "they weren't, John. She was a fanatic and an idiot. Yes, she was Mercy. And he was a man who regretted that he wasn't. It took surprisingly little to lead my brother astray."
"Nobody could lead him where he didn't want to go," said God, and his patience took a solemn edge. "You know that."
"Lord, don't tell me that," said his lictor, faintly smiling. "I have built an entire myriad on the idea that I could have made him come around, given 5 minutes."
His sister saint said nothing to this. She flicked her eyes down to her own glass instead, and he quickly filled up the awkward pools with,
"Anyway, let's drink to a woman who never divided opinion. Here's to Pyrrha Dvay."
All eyes trailed fatally down the table to the saint of duty. Your gaze was among them. You grasped the stem of your wine glass in your hand, and you looked at the face of the man who had been necromancer once to a woman called Pyrrha. The inscrutable lack of expression that had greeted you in the bathtub and the first time he'd walked into the Mithraeum's chapel. He said flatly with a note of warning,
"Augustine."
"I mean it. Don't you think that's astonishing after all this time? Even Mercy doesn't have a bad thing to say about her."
"Why am I constantly painted as a critical person?" came the inevitable critique.
"I say, here's to Pyrrha, the woman I cultivated a smoking habit to impress. The cavalier, the legend, the stone-cold fox. John, please stop joggling my elbow. I have heard stone-cold fox from your own holy lips."
The Emperor protested.
"Respectfully, respectfully."
Autus said,
"Another topic."
"Right," said Augustine.
He took another gulp of wine, as though to fortify himself, and Ianthe suggested,
"To our enemies, older brother."
"Yes, great," he agreed heartily. "A classic. This is why you are my chosen apprentice, chick. To our enemies, the enemies of the Empire, to those safely in the river, that is. I won't drink to enemies alive, but let's drink to enemies fallen, as we can afford to be gracious. Let's drink to the dried-up blood of Eden."
Both the Emperor and Mercy said immediately, "They're not gone."
"Fine, pedants. I drink to the best of them. Gone for absolute certain, not the remnant kooks, idiots and zealots who think a nuclear missile could give us pause. The commander would never have settled for a nuclear missile. Lord, that was a merry dance she led us. It deserves something. Perhaps it's a toast."
Across the table, you noticed that the saint of duty's knuckles had clenched just slightly. You had a good sense for knuckles. The Emperor mistook your focus for puzzlement.
It was before you were born, Harrowhark.
Long before you were born, added Mercy, owlishly. Because you are 3 years old.
This isn't really a story that deserves to be told after 3 glasses of wine.
That was never 3 glasses of wine, said the man to his left.
4 glasses of wine, amended God,
which was probably still inadequate.
This is a good lesson for you girls, not to underestimate anyone. A quarter century ago, these fanatics found out about the resurrection beasts, which are classified to the upper echelons of the cohort mind. So that was an intelligence effort and a half.
They knew about them, said Ortus. They just didn't know what they were.
Finding out what they were didn't stop them. They searched one beast out, threw away half their ships, separating a herald from the pack. Killed that herald. Let's drink to that.
To killing heralds, said his 2 elder lictors, and they drank, and so did Ianthe, and you put your lips on the glass.
Even a dead herald can drive a necromancer insane. They took that thing apart. They made it into knives. They made it into axes. They made it into armor. I mean, extremely frugal, but honestly, that commander had herald bullets.
Bullets, said Augustine. Darts, throwing knives, dead shot. Got me right between the eyes once. Mad as a cut snake, and 3 times as vicious. We nearly lost you to her a few times, didn't we, Ortus? Should we drink to Commander Wake?
The glasses rattled as the saint of duty stood and said the most words you had ever heard him say.
Probably not. Excuse me. I'm tired.
They watched him go in pursed-up silence. Teacher rose from the table silently, as though thinking of going after him. When the door shut behind the escaping lictor, Mercy Morn hissed,
Augustine, you ass!
And he protested calmly, he's fine.
You call that fine?
Sudden access of sympathy, a little uncharacteristic, when
not difficult to imagine that maybe...
Don't, said God, sitting back down with some difficulty. Don't. Not when you're finally talking again. This is more amicable conversation than I have seen you two exchange in... It must be decades. Don't. I've had a very nice evening. Harrow, you haven't drunk too much, have you?
You had drunk exceptionally too much and were dying to purge your kidneys manually.
No,
you said, at the same time that your seatmate said, very obviously, yes.
Nobody asked you,
you said, but Ianthe was moving her chair over, and she was slinging her living arm around your bare shoulders, which made them feel less bare and less cold, which you resented, and she was saying, there, Harry. God repressed a smile at this vile nickname, for which you once again assured Ianthe slow death.
Let me introduce you to the special world of sisterhood. I will reveal everything you do, contradict you at every turn, and hold back your hair in the morning.
You did not want Ianthe to reveal everything you did, nor did you want her to contradict you at every turn, and you especially did not want her to hold back your hair in the morning. But God said cheerfully,
here's to sisters.
And the other lictors reached for any glass that contained anything, and you had to take yours, and they pressed it into your hand, and you drank. Augustine said, to sisters, and the women we've left behind.
God's mouth was cheerful as ever, but his eyes were not when he said,
do I have to drink to that?
For the first time, you were witness to the saint of patience discombobulated.
Apologies, John. Wasn't meant as a jab.
It doesn't hurt anymore, most of the time, said God, and he was still smiling.
The lictor at his left was combing out her hair. It tumbled in a heavy mass around her shoulders, that curious heart of a yellow rose colour,
pinkish, reddish, goldenish shade that was not entirely appealing. Her glass still had wine in it, which seemed unrealistic, and she said,
"Here's a better toast. To the Emperor of the Nine Houses, to the Resurrector, to my God."
"To Emperor John Gaius, the Necrolord Prime," said Augustine, and he drained his glass. This was the only toast you were willing to drink to. You drank because you held to your convictions, and also because Ianthe was looking at you with the mocking and faintly pitying expression of someone who did not expect you to drink. This made you drink twice.
"I'm not going to drink to myself," Teacher was saying. "I'm not the best man who ever lived, but I'm not quite that much of a narcissist."
The Saint of Joy said, with uncharacteristic ferocity,
"You are the best man who ever lived."
"I'll drink to that," said Augustine.
You could not behold God's expression for any great length of time. Augustine stood, and he refilled his glass, and he refilled Mercy Morn's. He clinked his wine glass against hers with a little crystal tinkle. She beheld him with dim and unfeeling eyes, and they drank in silence, at either side of the Emperor of the Nine Houses. Eventually, she said,
"I think I wish Kitherea were here."
"I don't," said the saint on the other side.
We would have had to suffer her favourite conversation of who had the hottest cavalier, and my answer hasn't changed for anyone's money. I don't care that she was 10 years my senior. Pyrrha Dvay was hotter than the very fires of hell.
"Agreed," said God.
"John, you dog."
"An absolute bombshell," said God.
He looked deeply into Augustine's eyes, took another slug of wine, and then said in graveyard tones,
"Though maybe not quite such a bombshell as your mother."
It destroyed some cavern of your reverence to watch Augustine punch the Prince Undying on the arm, and to watch the Prince Undying gamely cuff him back. Part of your brain temporarily calcified into atheism.
You had not thought it would be like this.
From the day the letter arrived in Dreaber, you'd thought that your literal days would be spent in prayer, training, and the beauty of necromantic mysteries. You did not think any part of it would be spent honestly quite drunk, wearing a piece of material no larger than a towel, and with Ianthe Tridentarius's fingers idly caressing the hair at the nape of your neck. For a moment, you wondered wildly if you had hit your head quite hard entering the shuttle out of Dreaber and had hallucinated everything subsequent. Mercy Morn said peevishly,
"I always thought Nigella was prettier."
And both men assured her, "You're not wrong. Good choice, etc." Until Augustine said gloomily, "Try getting a look in with Cassie around, though." You turned your head and muttered into Ianthe's ear, knowing your desperation was naked.
"When do we leave?"
"The time has not yet come," she murmured. You looked into her shining brown-flecked eyes and were stricken with panic that the time might never come. Mercy Morn finished off another glass of wine. Teacher removed her wine glass and then, thoughtfully, removed the bottle closest to her, and then removed any bottles of wine within her reach, and she placed her tranquil oval of a face into her slender hand, and she said,
"You're wrong, Augustine. You still hate Christabel. You hated my cavalier long before what she did."
He was arrested in the process of refilling his glass. You had no idea how anyone could drink as much as the Saint of Patience had and remain coherent. He put down the bottle and said,
"Do I?"
God said,
"This isn't a conversation either of you have to have, not now, especially not after 5 glasses of wine."
"Lot more than 5. No. No, it's fine. Judge ye not. Let her dig him up again," said Augustine, though now he sounded a trifle unsteady. "Do I, Mercy?"
God help me, I don't think I do, she said.
Look me in the eyes and say that.
Augustine stood with nary a tremble. He wiped his mouth carefully with his handkerchief again, and although God had half risen too again, put his hand on Augustine's arm and looked at him, and whatever passed between them was too swift to classify, he moved next to the Saint of Joy's chair. He crouched a little, so that they were eye to eye. In the candlelight, you could not tell whether you thought they looked appallingly old, or no older than Ianthe, and he said,
Joy, what's done is done. They're dead. The crime is punished. I don't hate Christabel.
Her face was savage and smooth and implacable.
Say it again, she said.
I don't hate Christabel, he said lowly. Dear, I barely hate you.
For a moment you thought you were about to see a replay of what had happened in his rooms, and that the distraction would consist of a battle between two lictors that you would have been somewhat sorry to miss. It did not. Wild-eyed, tumultuous, unbalanced, Mercy leaned in and kissed him. An alarm crescendo of horror went off in your head. She did not kiss him placidly. He responded immediately and without restraint. The lictors kissed each other in the manner of two people who either held a decided passion for one another or were attempting to slide a hidden object mouth to mouth. The saints of joy and patience kissed each other with a fervid, drunken familiarity, without preamble or, frankly, any shame. God was trying to say something. Augustine parted from Mercy Morn with a noise vaguely like a vacuum hoovering up mincemeat, and, with no crash of unholy thunder, and without the rent of the universe in twain, and without his skin melting from his unworthy bones, he turned and also kissed the Emperor of the Nine Houses. You are glued to your seat. You are hot from your temples all the way down to the top of your ribcage, with outrage and mortification vying for top place within you. You are frozen as Augustine carefully, thoughtfully, and with a great deal of intent, put his mouth on God's mouth. As though this were not fodder enough for the coming apocalypse, Mercy Morn stood swaying. One thin dress strap was sliding precariously off her shoulder. When Augustine detached from the Emperor's solemn mouth, Mercy reached up, grabbed great fistfuls of his shirt, and kissed God too. It took Ianthe two attempts to get your attention. Eventually she stood you up wholesale, and with absolutely nobody paying attention to either of you, she propelled you out of the room. You looked over your shoulder as she opened the door. God had just picked up the Saint of Joy bodily and sat her at the edge of the table, and the Saint of Patience had his mouth at God's neck, which was horrible, and Ianthe hustled you through as though escaping from a fire. You had never seen three people get their hands on one another before. You had never seen two people get their hands on each other before. Ianthe closed the door just as Augustine's fingers reached the buttons of the Emperor's shirt, and you had never been so grateful to her in your entire life.